America Olivo. You're very much known for some of your horror parts, which we're going to talk about a little bit. But I guess the first thing that our listeners and readers might want to know is give us a little bit of background. How'd you get into acting?
Well, I've always been in the theater growing up. My mom was an actress and then an acting teacher. That's how she met my dad.
Wow.
Actually, he was one of her students and in acting class. And so I grew up in community theater, and she was a director and there. And ended up, though, studying opera theater at Juilliard through many different influences and, you know, mentors and things. I, for some reason, fell into that and became a singer with a pop group shortly after I graduated from Juilliard with DreamWorks Records and toured with a band called Saluna for years. Until DreamWorks Records closed their doors on their record division. And there was really no job for us, and we were really lucky at that point that UPN, the network that existed then, decided to make a sitcom about us, my band. And I hadn't acted in years or done anything, but we had a lot of fun stories, and we got together with UPN and our management, Suzanne DePass and Irene Dreyer, and we did a sitcom. It was very strange. Anyway, we didn't get picked up for a series, and UPN closed its doors, and shortly after that, I was looking at my resume going, okay, I don't have a record label, I don't have a network, I don't have a show, and I don't have anything else on my resume. I was, you know, at this point, you know, my mid-20s going, okay, so do I go back to school? What do I do? And I thought maybe I'd go out and on a couple auditions and thought I'd give it a try, and I booked something. I was on House, and then that was my first job outside of that that situation. And I just picked up from there. I started working, and I was really lucky, and started knowing some people, and then from there I dropped music for a while, but got some really lucky breaks, and now I'm just actually getting back to music. I started putting music back in doing on some of the soundtracks of the films that I was working on, and then now I've just recently done some dance music, and now I'm doing Broadway, which is, I'm doing a musical, so it's, all back to what I started with is theater, and now I'm here again. So that's kind of the journey. You asked me how I got into acting, and it's been sort of just music and theater and film and TV and everything, all just sort of coming from different ways. I'm an entertainer. I just work wherever someone.
Well, and that's great.
Basically.
Well, I think that's great because it gives you a lot of options, doesn't it? And gives you a lot of different places you can go. So life doesn't get very boring, does it?
Life is never boring. That is true. Yes. Life can be nerve-wracking, but never boring.
Now, one of the first big films that you appeared in, of course, was the Friday the 13th remake, and my understanding is that you were kind of a last-minute replacement in that. Tell me how that happened.
I was a replacement because the woman who was originally playing the role didn't think that it had integrity or something, or made that decision while on set, unfortunately, which... everybody's entitled to their opinion, but usually when it's on the clock of, and after you've agreed to do something, and then you change your mind mid-shooting.
Not very professional.
It's really unprofessional. So it really sucked for all the producers and everybody. I think she just thought she probably could compromise. It didn't, really think it was going to be that she was going to have to be in a tent, I don't know how she thought that she wasn't going to get away with, not having the sex scene before she gets killed.
Right. I mean, if you'd think that she'd know that going into a Friday the 13th movie, that was what was going to happen.
Exactly. So, if you don't survive, you're usually having sex or, smoking a doozy or something.
Right.
So, your role's not going to be, altruistic.
Exactly.
But when I got a call from a friend who was also at Juilliard with me, and just a friend who I was working on Bitch Slap at the time. And I was in I think it was Bakersfield or something. I don't remember where we were in the middle of the desert. And there's not a lot of, Four Seasons and fancy hotels out there.
Right.
I got a call from my friend who was on set in Austin, Texas, at the Four Seasons going, oh my God, we need you. And I said, well, I'm sorry, I'm so exhausted from this other shoot. I don't know what you're talking about. And I kept hanging up on him. He kept calling back. He was a friend. He's in the film.
Right.
Played, Nick Minnell played, I think Mike was his name in the film. And he goes, no, 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 we need you. I'm serious. He called me off the hook. And I remember being in the middle of the night. I'm like, I have to get up at 4 to shoot this film. Are you crazy? He's like, wrap the film. Get to Austin, Texas. 4 seasons, this, that. You know, and I was staying in this hotel in the middle of the desert. And
wow.
Sharing a bed with a roach. And I looked at the roach. And I'm like, hey, how's the 4 seasons going? And the roach was like, okay, let's go. And I went to the producers. Long story short, told them that I had this opportunity because my friend had gone to the producers and said I had the perfect person to replace the girl. She looks enough like the girl, and she's going to fit her costume and everything, and she's, you know, I know she's solid because I know her work. She can come in, and you can still use some of the overhead shots if you need it because they look enough alike.
Well, that's great.
So that was basically how I got it. It was basically kind of a look-alike situation.
Sure.
And I went to the producers. Producers know, you know, the EPs or whatever. The executives knew the executives on Friday the 13th. They call each other. They made kind of a deal. Okay, we'll wrap her out. And they were very kind to do that. A bitch slap and shit me off. They didn't realize when I arrived at Friday the 13th that I had my hair dyed blondish for bitch slap. And they were, like, freaking out.
Oh,
and they
boy.
Needed my hair to be back to its, you know, dark brown black color to replace this other girl. And, like, all of a sudden I'm, like, getting my hair dyed. And it was, like, no stopping at the 4 seasons. There was no enjoyment, and of course, since they had been so far, you know, with this other gal and, like, had lost time, at their they were losing their location and their funding, they needed to shoot me out in overtime back-to-back days, and they were only doing my scenes. I never went to the hotel. Oh. I never stopped. I landed, and all of my experience after my friend was like, it's so fun, you gotta come out, we're hanging out on the lake, and we're having a good time, and we're jet skiing, and all this stuff, which they'd been doing for weeks prior to shooting, because they were getting to know each other as a cast and all that. None of that applied to me. So it was very funny.
So that was pretty hectic then.
I just got hung up and burned and screamed and tortured and then put back on the plane home. But what?
I said, so it was pretty hectic for you. You didn't really get to enjoy that shoot then.
Yeah, exactly. It makes me laugh in retrospect because everybody always asks me, oh, that must have been so fun, and everybody else has so much fun. And it is fun in retrospect because now I know the cast, and I ended up going out later for some reshoots and things like that, and then got to know people on a slower pace and wasn't as, you know, frenetic as when I first had to come out. And now it's great. I love the cast. We're all really good friends. And though I didn't get those 2 weeks of jet skiing on the lake and all that fun stuff, I've had a lot of fun with them. And, you know, later going to conventions and signing with them and having just really good times. They're really good people. So.
Well, that's great. And then, of course, Bitch Slap, a big movie for you. It's kind of an action role for you. Was that difficult? And did you do a lot of those stunts?
Yeah, actually, that was not kind of, it was a full-on action film for me. It was intense. Zoe Bell was the stunt coordinator for that film. Oh, honey, thanks, son. My husband said she just said, he was just in L.A. and saw Zoe Bell, and she says, hi. Thank you, I'm on the air. Okay. So Zoe Bell was amazing, and what was so great about her is that she, being one of the only female stunt coordinators in the business, she had worked on the worked with the people who did Bitch Slap. They were the same people, the director, producer, and everything from Hercules and Xena in New Zealand.
Oh, okay.
She worked with them. They gave her the opportunity from just going from stunt to stunt coordinator as a female. As a woman, that's really rare, and she's just absolutely incredible. It was great because she was teaching women, you know, mainly women in the film, to do the stunts, and it was so handy. I've done stunts for other films, but it was so great to see another woman's body do it and then to learn from her and her, the way her physicality was. It actually made me feel like I understood the stunts and emotions better, just watching her do it. Not only that, but seeing her do it made me feel as a woman that I could do it, whereas a lot of times you chicken out when you see, you know, a male stunt coordinator is like, okay, then we're going to have you do this, and you're going to flip over there, and then you're going to do this, and you see the men kind of like, okay, fine, you guys throw on a wig and figure it out, and I'll be over here. I don't know if I can do that or my body can take it. Mm-hmm. And Zoe was just so cool. She just comes out, she's like, oh, yeah, you can do it, you know, with her Kiwi attitude. She's like, of course you can. So she made us do everything, even though she steps in and does the stunt work as well,
right,
for us. So not all of what you're seeing is us actually doing it, but she made us learn it all and actually accomplish it all. So I felt really, really, really great and strong after the film going, you know, I did do it, though she did it probably better in a lot of takes, which, of course, that's her job. And
sure.
They would use that as much as possible, but if they needed to, if you saw a side of the face or if you see the front of the face or something, they wanted to make sure they had it covered by having us actually accomplish all of the stunts ourselves. So that was a really, really great gift.
So was that your favorite part of doing that role, was all the action? Hello?
Hello?
Lost you there for a second. I said, was that your favorite part of doing Bit Slap? Was the action part of the role?
It's one of my favorite parts, of course. There's so many. I love the film itself. It's so much fun and hilarious. The cast itself is great. We're such good friends. We've traveled everywhere together, from the Cannes Film Festival, Toronto Film Festival, all over Scandinavia to Scandinavian film festivals, and now it's been over in Spain. I didn't get to go to that, but it's gone all over the world. And we got to go together. That, it's like when you're saying, you know, was the filming fun? Sometimes the filming's really hard, but it's the fun that you have after with the cast looking back at this time going, oh my God, we made that happen. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And so looking back and being proud of what we made is, and what we were able to accomplish, and being in an action film and actually pulling off a really rough character and in a, you know, in this tongue-in-cheek kind of way, makes me feel good. On the day, though, I can't tell you, I was so beaten up, so cut up, so bruised, so hot, and so just probably angry as Camaro was in the middle of the desert going, what did I sign up for?
Yeah, I'll bet.
But it's always fun later. You just know you have to get through it. You know, everything's like that. That's worth looking back at. It's always hard, but
yeah.
Hard work makes it much more fun later.
I'm sure. You've also, even though they were small parts, you got to be in two of the biggest movies of the last few years with the very quick one in Iron Man, and of course Transformers 2. Can you tell us how that all happened?
Yeah, actually, Iron Man came up as, I think that was one of the first films that I ever did. It takes so long to get, to do all the special effects and everything on those type of big films that we taped it so long before it actually came out. It was one of the first acting gigs I ever landed, and I remember being just so confused. I went in for an audition, and I had to improv in the audition in a bathing suit, and it got put on tape, and then I got a call that I was, hired for some film called Iron Man, and I told my ex-boyfriend at the time, who's a big comic book and graphic novel, you know, enthusiast, and I said, oh, yeah, okay, so I booked my first studio film, something called Iron Man. I remember him just freaking out. He's like, no, what? And I, like, had to catch up on who that was and what it was, and I just had never heard of it. And so by the time I was on set, I was very aware that this was going to be one of these, like, you know, could go either way, but it was going to have a lot of attention, and they were so secretive about it. You know, like, everything that I'm ever involved with is some big secret. I'm never allowed to talk about any of the projects I do for years and whatever, months after, so that part of it's annoying. But anyway, I was on set, and it was supposed to be Dubai, but we were up in Laurel Canyon in the Hollywood Hills, and they made it, they green-screened it, wrapped it around this beautiful mansion.
Right.
They were going to fill in the backdrop of Dubai, but they never got to it because they ended up cutting the scenes. But when I got to set, I remember just arriving on set, and John Favreau just walks up and says, Enrica, thank you so much for being here. Really, you know, happy that you could be a part of this. And I'm looking at him like one of my first acting jobs, shaking his hand. I'm like, oh, okay, of course, my pleasure. Thank you. You know, and then I turn and I see Gwyneth Paltrow and Robert Downey Jr. And you know, Gwyneth Paltrow's husband was there, from Chris Martin, and Simon Pegg was on set that day. And I remember just looking around, being like, "Oh, wow! This is really a good day for me."
Yeah.
kind of freaking out right now, but things are looking up. This is kind of cool. I was just so impressed with the company that I was put in, thrust in so early in my experience, and like I was still gathering what the concept was or what I was going to be doing. You know, I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And then he had us. I didn't understand what the audition process. I didn't even know what my lines were going to be, and I kept going. They were so secretive about script and everything. I thought they were going to hand me a script on set. Basically, it wasn't so much the secret as it was that Robert Downey improvs, except for the beats of what the scene has to be. He's an improv artist, and he's amazing on the fly.
Yeah,
and
I've heard that.
He just was improvising the whole time, so you just had to work with him, and that's why they wanted people good at being off the cuff in the audition room. And he's just funny and amazing, and I was only on set for a couple days, and then it was deleted. But it was really cool later when it became like this huge blockbuster. I was like, I was in that film. And I was like so excited when it came out, and then my scenes were cut, which is classic. And then when Transformers 2 happened, it was because I had done Friday the 13th that Michael Bay produced, and then he was directing Transformers 2. I happened to be passing through Philly I was going to New York, passing through Philly to say hi to somebody, John Barba, who cast me in Bitch Slap, who was casting also in Philadelphia for Transformers 2. And he said, stop in and say hi, while you're here. And so I just stopped in, and then I was going to take a train up to New York, thought I'd be there for one night, if that. And Michael Bay's like, oh, it's great to have you here. We should put you in the film. I'm like, yeah, and I'm just cheers, toast, I'm looking at him going, we should do that. Of course, why not? Let's do that. He's just really, gracious, nice to offer, and I mm-hmm. didn't really even think he was serious till the next day. I was going to go back. I was really on my way to New York, and I got a call from Wardrobe, and I'm going, well, what the heck does he have planned for me anyway for this? So I went and I reported the set, and at some point, I'm sitting in the room where you kind of wait while production's happening until they need you, and you have a trailer usually, and then like kind of a greenish room, holding room kind of area, and then I hear this mm-hmm. Fuss, and I run out, and they said, okay, Emrica, let's have you just improv, again, improv with Shia. I need you to do something, he's going to come by, and there's that moment where his mom's eating pot brownies, and there's a frisbee going on, and
right.
I just need something in this space here, and so I thought you'd be good to just, kind of throw something out, and I was like, really? I don't have any idea. I've never read the script. I don't even know what's going on right now. And he's like, oh, okay, quick crash. So this is happening, and this is in his mother's, the pop brownies, and blah, blah, blah. And I go, oh, okay, cool. So just had this few minutes of, this banter, and he was having me try it in different accents. I remember it was just really funny where I'm on set going, what am I doing here? I always wake up in these weird situations. And then I felt really honored that he put me in it. And then I was certain that was going to be cut because I'd already been a part of kind of large productions where they over film things, but it actually ended up staying in the film.
Yes, it did.
Much to my surprise, I didn't even talk about it. And later, people kept pulling it up, like, "Oh, you're in Transformers. What did you do?" And I'm like, "A, I'm not allowed to say anything about the film because it's Transformers.
Right.
I'm not allowed to release any info. But B, it's not a big deal. You don't need to don't hold your breath. You'll miss me if I'm even in it." And then later, I did I have a good call from my little brother, like, hey, man, I just saw you. I was like, you didn't even tell me you were in this movie. I'm like, because such an afterthought. I call it a cameo.
Well, but it's still nice to be part of such iconic films.
Yeah, and he was paying homage to kind of another project by throwing me in, and he does that with a lot of his mm-hmm. actors that he works with, and he'll throw you into another film, just kind of throwing back to like, oh, hey, wink, wink, Friday the 13th. Here mm-hmm. we hear this person is in Transformers 2 as cameos, carry through. He likes to do that, and it was the opportunity that I was there. So,
yeah,
it was really nice of him.
That's very neat. And a film of yours that that maybe didn't get as much attention, but we reviewed on Upcoming Discs and found you to be incredibly good in, of course, Neighbor.
Thanks.
And even talked to Rob.
In the other room. Huh?
Yeah, and we even talked to Rob Macedonio a few times. He actually did an interview with us, and we've talked back and forth. In fact, he's invited me to the set to his next film, so I'm looking forward to that. But I found your role on there. It's really one of the best horror roles I've seen in a long time, because you managed to not only be quite evil, but you also managed to be so whimsical and amusing. And I'm just very curious as to what thought process, how did you develop that overall look of that character and how you carried yourself?
Well, You know, thank you for those compliments. I appreciate that.
It's an incredible performance. It really is.
Thank you. It's interesting. It's a performance. I feel like you either get it or you don't. And which it's there's a lot of people who are like, I just don't get it. How could you be so cold, or how could you flip? You know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, have you ever met a sociopath before? They don't have any. There's no rhyme or reason. You know.
Exactly.
And it was lovely to have for the first time the freedom and opportunity that Rob did with that role. And I said, you know, of course, I'm as an actor, you dig in, you're like, okay, what's the reason? Where's she coming from? And he's like, have you ever thought that maybe there just is no reason, that people just sometimes aren't wired right? You know, and he's like, you know, what about Clockwork Orange? What about Kubrick? And I'm like, oh, aha! Mm-hmm. So I went back into, revisited A Clockwork Orange before filming, and you know, it was just understanding what's behind the murders of, you know, sociopathic person, and can that, you know, what is, how do you play a role like that? And here I'd been in Bitch Slap, where even though that's a whimsical film, my role in it, even though you're in an over-the-top world, you have to still really, really believe.
You have to ground
anger and angst behind the character. And so Camara was tortured. Her past was tortured in Bitch Slap. And I really was tortured as a, you know, I was devastated. I come home emotionally exhausted from that character.
I'll bet.
Even though it's an over-the-top, silly, fun film. And then here's Neighbor, which is a completely gory, you know, over-the-top gory film.
Right.
Terribly disturbing. And yet I was going home happy.
Yeah, because it's almost a bright character in a very dark environment.
Exactly, and so I wasn't a tortured person. In that, you know, I was just somebody who didn't. I don't have any empathy. I don't have sympathy nor empathy. I'm a sociopath, and I am a sociopath who obviously was the horror film aficionado herself, because she references other things. This is what she's learned. This behavior she's learned and enjoys. She loves watching it. She doesn't understand why it would be that dawned on her that it's wrong, really, or she doesn't really care. So it's so much. She's having so much fun through the film,
right?
That I would go home in such a good mood. You know, I met my husband on that film, and in between takes, you know, I'm singing and dancing. I'm sure he probably. I don't know. Kinky, why he's interested in why he married me, I don't get.
Well, that was going to be the other question. Did you meet him on that film, or had you guys known each other before the film and then got married? So you met on the film then?
We met before the film in rehearsal.
But in connection to the project?
Correct, in connection to the project. And then fell in love in the process of this misery, you know, Kathy Bates, James Caan process.
Yeah.
Somehow we fell deeply and madly in love with each other. So it'll be an interesting story for our children one day.
We'll
figure out how we're going to explain that. But it's not a concern right now.
Well, now Rob's talked about doing a sequel, and of course we all know Rob's struggling with cancer right now, and we wish him the absolute best there. Would you do a sequel if he does a sequel?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, I've been given some previews to where the character goes, and before he got sick, he was just so prolific, writing more and more. He was so inspired by the character and the project that he was going on, and we were back and forth on it. But everything's been, as you know, been put on hold. But when he gets better and when things get back in the works, we'll see what happens.
Well, and we really do wish that, because I got to tell you, that's, you know, it sounds like he's going through some really hard times, and I know my audience would love to see the sequel.
Yeah, I know he wants it to happen too, and it will. It's just, we're mortal. We have to go through, unfortunately. I'm sure he'll come out of this.
Oh, yeah, I am as well. He's got a pretty good attitude about the whole thing.
He does.
But I know you're probably busy, and I don't want to hold you up too much. So I just want to touch on one more film. Just recently watched Circle, which we'll be reviewing soon. And I wanted to ask you, looking at the box art and the buzz from that film, it makes it look like you know, it's almost like a torture porn movie, and that you're going to be tortured the thing, and then you end up being pretty much taken care of pretty quickly. What's with the publicity? Did you get any hit off of what that's about? Why they did that?
I don't actually. You know, it's funny because it's one of the first horror films that had come out, which I am the lead character in. Didn't have me on the cover at all, nor anybody in the cast. The Last Resort.
Right.
And then this one comes out, and I'm on the cover. It made me giggle at first. I was honored.
But misrepresenting what you're doing, too. It's not, I mean, that scene that looks like it's depicted there isn't in the movie.
No, but I think they want, because it's less horror and more thriller, I think, the film, they really do want, they're going for surprise turns and twists. And sure. I think the idea, though, your listeners, if they haven't seen it yet, the idea is probably to follow to be misled and to go for,
right.
You know, to get sucked into the red herring and or where this is going, and then to be derailed.
Right.
So that's my feeling about it. But
where'd that accent come from?
What?
Where did that accent come from?
Which one?
The accent you used on Circle. It's some kind of Latin American accent. It seems that it appears like you're trying to do something there.
I was like, I thought you meant my accent right now.
No, during in Circle.
Oh, yeah. That came from Michael Watkins, who's the director. We wanted her to be, kind of annoying, mm-hmm. yet and to stand out, but in some sort of way that would be there needed to be a comedic element. And I just tried a bunch of different kind of things on him, and I remember him just being like, I like that one. And it was my idea of South Beach, Miami, really like pretentious, rich gal,
uh-huh.
who's like, you know, got her South Beach kind of Cuban whatever influence, like way uber wealthy in her mind, and like, what is going on, and why am I in this like disgustingly dirty place?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was just making an option, just thinking about somebody I knew that was like that, and so it just comes from somebody you know and who is all about, you know, living in this glitz and glamour world, and then, you know, being thrust into kind of this dirty element, and then that was, you know, supposed to be her.
Finally, what's coming up for you? What can we look to see you for in the future? I know there's probably some projects you can't talk about, but what can you tell us to look for?
I never can talk about anything. It sucks. Actually, I've got some music out right now. Like I said, I put on Bitch Slap. I had two tracks on. Also, Neighbor. And I don't think I have anything on Circle now. I've been doing some also dance music. It's not a part of those. I had a song called Deja Vu out, and it went up the charts, and now just been released internationally, and I'm following up with that soon. So that's on iTunes, and people can check that out.
And how can they find that? Where can they go to find that? We want to make sure that that people
iTunes?
Can find it.
Just iTunes.
Okay.
iTunes. and also on the, and you can hear just on Neighbor and on Bitch Slap, you can hear that the songs are on there. Then I'm now right now on Broadway in Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark, the U2's Bono and The Edge and Julie Taymor production of Spider-Man the Musical, which opened in November. So I'm in New York in rehearsals nearly all day and all night, every day.
Wow.
Putting this together with this amazing cast of a lot of wonderful, talented people. Very humbled by being surrounded by such amazing people.
Mm-hmm.
But that's opening up. That's not something that you're going to see on a song, you know, in the theaters. But it's something I think you should see. So if you're ever headed to New York, or it should give you a reason to come. Not for me and for my sake, but just because the show is going to be amazing.
Sounds good.
Yep, hello?
I said, sounds good. So, any other films coming out?
I do have some other films in the works, but I'm not going to be starting those until next year, and I don't like to talk about them until everything is really solidified, because I've done that before, and then things change, and then I feel like an idiot.
No, I absolutely understand.
So, things coming up, but not until, I won't be in production until next year, until after I do a run of my Spider-Man contract, and then I will be discussing that.
Well, great. Well, we hope we'll see you in Spider-Man, and hopefully that'll have a good long run to it.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I don't know how long it'll run, or that I will get to be a part of it or decide to be a part of it, but yes, do see the show one way or another, because it's going to be great.
Well, great. I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. It's very generous of you to do that. It sounds like you're very busy, and I know that our listeners and readers at Upcoming Discs are going to be just overjoyed to hear from you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much. Like I said, Rob's invited us to the set if he ever does a sequel, so maybe we'll see you then.
Okay.
I hope he gets around to it soon, so it'll be a lot of fun.
I do too. That would be a very good day.
Well, thank you very, very much for your time and effort. I hope you have a great day, and we'll look for you in the movies and in Spider-Man.
Awesome. Okay.